Just so you know, just so there's no confusion, Jay and I did not call each other to make sure that we coordinated today. It's just great minds think alike, yeah. So thank you.
This is my casual gear.
This is your casual. I asked. I had to make sure because I know my dad was always in that suit and tie and stuff, so I want to make sure where we're at within that. And as Jay stole pretty much all of my intro, it is really good to be back. It is a special joy, and it is a special privilege to be able to be back here at Faith Baptist. And I just want to say thank you again to Robbie and the team for sharing in the worship this morning. I'm just always amazed at how God can put things together. And what He's been laying on my heart to be able to share with you this morning, He very much did the same thing with Robbie, because him and I never talked. I met him this morning. And how God orchestrated that and really set up what I believe He wants to share with you. The truth is, many of you may not know who I am. You may not know who my dad is, even though I know that he came back a few times over the last year to connect. But I do want to just share just a little bit of a background. And to give you just a little bit of perspective why this is special for me to be able to come back and share with you. And I'm trusting that I'm going to be able to keep it together for the most part. But it is an emotional coming home for me. And I say it in that way because we were here from 1980 to 1993. And in 1993, my parents moved to Green Bay. And that essentially was our life moved to Green Bay. And even though I was off in college and starting life within that way, there's only been a few times where I've come back to Peshtigo to see how many things have changed. And it was interesting this past December when I came back for Jim Stillman's celebration of life, his funeral, of just how overwhelmed I was with emotion. When I came back and got on the exit, which was really strange for me, because we never had an exit when I lived here. And I didn't know if I was supposed to go left or right. And so thankfully I went the right direction, the correct direction. And as I'm driving through, just this flood of memories and emotion just came over me. And I cried all the way through town. And my dad kind of looked at me and says, "You are right?" And I said, "Yeah, it's good. I need this." Because friends, essentially my entire childhood was here. 13 years of my life from kindergarten through graduation was here. And sure, there are scores of people and faces and memories that came up and activities that I shared in. But honestly, folks, what was touching within my heart was this place, Faith Baptist Church. And looking back at all those different moments, looking back at Vacation Bible School with Lollipop the Dragon. And for those of you who remember that Vacation Bible School and Lollipop, just so you know, Lollipop was my dad. I'm not sure if you ever figured that out. Looking back at over the fall and doing the celebration, the Olympics of Light that we would do. And looking at the building that we used to be in and the men and the women that set the charge to be able to say, we want to build our own building, and literally pounded the nails and put the shingles on and stained the woodwork. I remember being on the roof and pounding those nails right there with you. I remember the times that we would play softball on Friday nights or Saturday nights, and playing basketball in the gym, in the old gym in Marinette. I remember taking weekends and weeks out at Lake Ellen Bible Camp with so many of you. And time again, just looking back at these moments, and that's why it's special for me to be back here. Now, there is one memory that I like to look back on, and I laugh. I enjoy it, even though it doesn't put me in a very good light. Because it's something, it's a story that connects with the fact that God can do anything with anyone. I remember I was probably in sixth or seventh grade, and I was in Dave and Lisa's Sunday school class. Dave and Lisa Gregerson's Sunday school class. And I have a feeling, I remember the day that a new family came into town, and I decided it was my job to be the welcoming committee, the clown committee, the disruptive committee, and I was just a pain in Dave's butt. So he kicked me out of Sunday school class. And to this day, I'm the only one that they've ever kicked out of Sunday school class. And part of me kind of takes a little bit of joy in that and pride in that. And parents, just so you know, if you have kids that are a little unruly, God works in mysterious ways. And you never know what may happen. Because by God's grace, I think things within my life has turned out to be okay. And it's only been by God's grace. Now, to fast forward to today, it's enough on the past. To fast forward to today, I've been married for over 20 years to my beautiful bride, Teresa. This is a picture of us out in Yellowstone, Grand Tetons behind us. Brad, stay focused here, Brad. He loves being out west, and so he shared a little story with me, so stay focused. I know you want to be there right now. But this is my family. Jada, my daughter, is almost 17, a junior. And Caleb, as you saw, who's now playing on his iPhone in Jay's office, he's 12 and he's in sixth grade as well. And this is another picture of our family. That's Reese. That's our beast. She's a little cockapoo. And she has as much personality as the rest of the family does within that. I also, as Jay had mentioned, have had the privilege of working at New Life Community Church for the last 10 years. Prior to that, we were actually a part of the launch team where we started New Life almost 14 years ago. And since then, I've shared as an associate role, and now I'm the lead pastor. But one of the things that we champion at New Life is that we want to be able to see our region, our Lakeshore region, completely transformed. And so our desire is to do that through planting churches. And so early on, we planted Crossroads Community Church in Sheboygan, and then Journey Church in Sheboygan Falls. Two falls ago, we planted Connections Church in New Holstein. And now this past fall, Crossroads in Sheboygan planted Crossroads in Manitowoc. And it will say in the last 14 years that we've been able to see five churches started and over thousands of people's lives touched. Just blows my mind. And I want to be able to encourage you today of what does it look like to live on mission? I really want to actually start with a question with you. Does anyone know how long you've been doing Missions Month? Does anybody have an idea? Yes. I wasn't sure, and I asked that question. Sure enough, a few moments after I asked the question, a note was written down, and it was handed to Jay. And it said, mission was started at least in 1985. And Bob and Penny Borchert, remember the cards that said, whatever, whenever, wherever. You see, Missions Month has been a fabric of your church for years, decades. And so that's why I kind of want to ask a little bit of a different question for you this morning. And the question that I want to be able to ask you and encourage you with is, what's the motivation of Missions Month? What's the purpose? What's the drive? Why, after year, after decade, after decade, after decade, do we continue to go towards doing a missions month? Folks, I believe as a church, to fully engage in missions month, it is up to the person that's sitting in your seat. It's not the person that's sitting next to you. That the motivation and the drive to do Missions Month is up to the person that's sitting in your seat. It's up to you. Now, before you begin to think that I have this different definition of Missions Month, I want to encourage you to be able to look and to sit and to really wrestle with this conversation of what's my motivation to be a part of this. Because if you believe that I'm going to ask you to sell everything and move to Timbuktu, you may miss a greater conversation that I think God wants to have with you. I'm not saying that He might not ask you to do that, but I think there's more to it than simply saying missions is over there. So my prayer today is, would you be able to be willing to wrestle through the question of what's the missional motivation? Why should I be on mission within my life? The theme passage that has been suggested for this Missions Month is 1 John 3:18. And it says this, "Dear children, let's not merely say that we love each other. Let us show the truth by our actions." A very simple passage, isn't it? It's a passage that you may have memorized. It's a passage that you may even have a bookmark within your Bible or maybe even within a favorite book of yours. It's a passage that you want your children to live out, right? You want them to be able to love one another in truth and actions, not just with word. But friends, what I think is interesting to me is that there's a deeper challenge, a deeper depth within this passage. And I want to unpack this passage with three questions. With three questions. Now, just as a kind of a side note, I'm not a big fan of jumping around to like 17 different passages and weaving and winding your way around. I typically like to stay within one passage, maybe move between a few of them. But I'll tell you what. When you read the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and when you read the epistles, the starting of the early church, it is very hard not to read those books without seeing mission all over it. And so I'm going to do the best that I can to keep it focused and trusting that we don't have any more gremlins in our computer that we did in the first service. But I'm going to guide you through some of these important, I think, mission passages. And if you miss something or you don't quite catch something, please talk with me afterwards and I'll make sure I get that to you. So the first question that I want us to engage in within this passage is, who are we? Who are we? Well, based on the passage, it says that we are dear children. Children of who? Children of God. We've already sung two beautiful songs about that picture, about that snapshot of the fact that we are children of God. But friends, what does that really mean? When we begin to allow it to drill down deep, what does it mean to be a child of God? What does it mean to be, to have Christ's identity, to have God's identity, to have His image? Because we need to be able to wrestle in that. I don't want just to jump that, hey Aaron, I know it, I've been there, I've done that. I want you to drill it down just a little bit deeper. Because take a look at Christ's identity in Matthew chapter 3. Matthew chapter 3 verse 16 and 17 says it this way. As soon as Jesus was baptized, He went up out of the water. And at that moment, heaven was opened and He saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and a lightning on Him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is My Son, whom I love. With Him I am well pleased." Now we see in this moment right here, there's this voice, this declaration, and we hear God stating upon Jesus, "This is My Son, whom I love. With Him I'm well pleased." I have to ask you a question. What has Jesus done up until this point? What has He accomplished? You see, when we begin to look at where this passage starts, the only thing that Jesus has done is to grow from a child to a man. He hadn't preached His first message yet. He hadn't healed anybody yet. He hadn't fed the thousands. He hadn't called His disciples. He hadn't done the thing that He was supposed to do, go to the cross and rise again. He hadn't done any of that. But yet what we see God declaring is saying, "This is My Son, whom I love. With Him I'm well pleased." You see, based upon that identity, it's a declaration that Christ's identity was based on God's love for Him. That Christ's identity was based on God's love for Him. It was His Son, His child, and the love that went over Him. And then we jump ahead to Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 5. Take a look at this. It says, "Follow God's example." We just saw how God had dealt with Christ within that identification of love. And Paul says this, "Therefore, as dearly loved children, walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us." See, what do we begin to see with here? We are dearly loved children called to love. It's who we are. Is it based on anything that we do? Is our love and that identity of a dearly loved child of God, based on anything that we can do? Or anything that we don't do? No, it's God's gift of love to us. It's our identity. It's who we are. So friends, there's really two things that I want to pause here for a second for you to wrestle with. The first off is that if you haven't received that gift of love, Maybe you know about it cognitively. Maybe you've seen it, you've heard about it, but you haven't received it. It's like a gift that you leave unwrapped underneath the tree at Christmas time. It has your name on it, but you haven't received it. You know it's for you, but you haven't received it. You haven't taken it. You haven't opened it. So there's some of you here that you've been dancing around or flirting with the idea of receiving God's love. Maybe today is the time to say, you know what, I need that to be mine. I need to receive that gift of love that was given to me, that's spoken over me, that's a desire deep within, and receive that. Then there's the second reality for those of us who have experienced that love, who that identity is, that is our identity. Are we living that out? Are we living out that motivational mission to say, it is our identity to love, so I'm going to be on mission to love? Let me illustrate it this way. Within the first 3 weeks of college, when I was on the football team at that time, there was a nickname that was given to me. You see, there's three of us that hung out, Joe, Nathan, and myself. And we just jokingly called ourselves the Little Rascals. And so Joe was Alfalfa, Nathan was Buckwheat, and I was Spanky. What was unique about that whole situation is that when we were at football practice one day, one of them yelled out, Aaron. I didn't respond because we had like seven Aarons on the team, big rush during that time of life. And so I didn't respond, and all of a sudden one of them goes, hey, Spanky. And I turn and answer, well, the whole football team heard it. And so then they just started calling me Spanky. Spanky, 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 Spanky. And throughout my freshman year, I got to know folks, got to know the folks on my dorm, on Freshman Hill, and they always referred to me as Spanky. There's folks that I knew that entire year that had no idea what my first name was. I was Spanky. And then I met my wife Teresa at Bethel, and she only knew me as Spanky and the security officer that sat in the booth. And so she introduced me to her family as Spanky. Well, the thing is, with her family, they are a family of nicknames. There's Deuce, there's Whitey, there's Moose, and now there's Spanky. And so for the last over 20 plus years, in the circle of my college friends and the circle of my in-laws, I am known as Spanky. That's my identity. That is who I am. It's what I'm known for. So my question again for you this morning is going to be, who are you known for? If our identity is love, are you known for love? You see, because we are loved, we are called to love. Is that what people would identify you as? Would people be able to say, yeah, you know what, that person, there's something different about that person. That person's filled with love because it's our identity. It's who we are. Paul says, as dearly loved children, walk in the way of love. See, our first missional motivation needs to be based on who we are. And our identity is love. Are we walking in that love? Let's take a look at the second question. In the second question, the answer is going to seem really obvious. You're like, thanks, Captain Obvious. But you know what? I don't think it's something that we live out regularly. And what's interesting to me is I was looking at a variety of different translations with this passage of 1 John 3:18. And there's only one translation that called it out. Take a look. I have them listed right up here. In the New Living Translation, it says, let us not merely say that we love each other, but let us show the truth of love. In the NIV, it says, let us not love with words or speech, but with action and truth. The ESV says, little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and truth. And my dear children, in that message, let us not talk about love, let us practice real love. So you notice the difference in those four passages? Only one talks about the who we're supposed to love. Everything else is just assumed. But the New Living Translation says, hold up, not so fast, my friend. It says we need to love each other. Now again, Aaron, wow, Captain Obvious. Of course we're supposed to love each other. But allow that to drill down a little bit deeper. And let me ask another question. Who's the each other? Who's the each other that we're called to love? See, I believe to be motivated by mission, we need to know that our love for each other has no walls, and has no boundaries. Now, before some of you jump and turn this into a political statement, it is not a political statement. I'm not saying we should or we shouldn't have a wall in regards to our country. What I'm saying is that this is a biblical statement. And biblical love has no walls and has no boundaries. Let me just give you one pause though. I'm saying this in practical, missional language. I'm not talking about unhealthy relationships. Okay? I'm not talking about those relationships that may be abusive or may be hurtful, that you shouldn't have any boundaries. That's another conversation, another message that Jay can do later. Right? All right, excellent. What I'm saying is to be on mission. What are the walls and what are the barriers that we have? Because to live out that biblical truth, Jesus models for us, he doesn't live by walls and he doesn't live by boundaries. Look at the last words that Jesus said in Acts chapter 1:8. That's our question, by the way. Who are we for? Acts 1:8. Last things that Jesus said. You'll receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. You see, the disciples hearing that was to some extent brand new. Why is he giving this directive? Because when we begin to look at the map, and I'm not sure if you'll be able to see this very well, it's a cheesy map, but it's the best that I could do. Yeah, you can't see it really well. But that's all right. But you can maybe notice when we look at Jerusalem, it's going to be down here on the bottom, right there's Jerusalem. That's what they're familiar with. We'll do it on this side too. That's so cool, look at that. Jerusalem, woo! Okay? They were familiar with Jerusalem. They knew Jerusalem. That was their Jewish city. They were familiar with Judea, which is this entire region. Okay? They were familiar with Marinette County. They were familiar with O'Connell County. But then Jesus said there's Samaria. And then there's this whole area of Samaria. They're like, no, Jesus, we don't go to Samaria. We go around Samaria. See, Samaria has the half-breeds. Samaria is the people that we don't associate with. But then why does Jesus say it? And then he says the outer ends of the earth. Jesus, there's more Gentiles out there. There's more people that are not like us out there. You don't mean to go all the way out there, do you? And he just says, yeah. You want to know why? Because that's the way that Jesus modeled it. Jesus modeled it that way. And he says, now because I modeled it, I want you to go do it. Jesus wasn't bound by the temple. Surprisingly enough, he didn't hang out the entire time in the temple. Jesus didn't have the walls and the boundaries of his religious system. Jesus didn't have the walls and the boundaries of his Jewish traditions. He pushed against all those walls. And he pushed against all those boundaries. He went to Tyre, which is on the northern edge, all the way up to the top, and healed a Canaanite woman. He went over to Capernaum and healed a centurion servant. He went to the outer spiritual edge and healed a demonic man. He went to the outcast of all outcasts, a leper. And not only did he heal him, but he touched him. And he was known for being a friend of sinners and tax collectors, so much so that not only did he have meals with them, but one of them was his disciple. It was called Matthew. So where are you willing to go towards? Who are you willing to go towards? Who do you choose to reach out and touch? Who are you for? We had the opportunity to build a relationship with a group of people on mission in the Nassau, Bahamas. And I know it sounds like a great sacrifice to have to go to the Nassau, Bahamas to serve Jesus, but somebody has to. I might as well go. But anyways, in 2007, when I was first introduced to this group, we went with another organization, and we had kind of two opportunities. One, we could work in a Haitian refugee camp, where we were building basically huts for the Haitian refugees, or we could go to a place called the All Saints Camp. And the All Saints Camp was a former leper colony that now had been transformed, sort of, renamed, to an AIDS camp. And over 50% of the people there were dropped off because their families gave up on them. The hospitals gave up on them. The government gave up on them, and they simply wanted to find a safe resting place for them to die. Others were not there because of AIDS, but because of other health issues. And so we could either go to the All Saints camp, or we could go to the Haitian refugee camp. And in my immaturity, even though I was a leader on the camp, and in my arrogance, in my fear, in my ignorance, I told myself I wanted nothing to do with the All Saints camp. And I'm just going to work with the Haitian refugee camp. I want to get dirty physically. I don't want to get dirty spiritually. I just want to get dirty physically, and I want to pound stuff, dig stuff, whatever the case may be. And so I went with the Haitian refugee camp. And we were working there all week, and then all of a sudden on Thursday it rained. And we couldn't go to the Haitian refugee camp. And we had to go to All Saints camp. And in my selfishness and my arrogance, I was angry. I didn't want to go there. I was fearful. I didn't want to get too close. And so I stayed back. I stayed away. I said, that's fine, you guys can do all that stuff, but I'm not going to. I'll pray from a distance. Well, from 2007 to 2011, my good friends Tim and Felicia Ryan, who lived in Fond du Lac, had a heart for the All Saints camp. Had a heart so much that they did decide to sell half of their roofing company and half of their salon and sell their house and move to the Nassau, Bahamas to serve the people at All Saints camp. And I was like, great. Now what do I got to do? I got to go help them because they're my friends. So 2011, I went back with a group of people just from New Life. And it was a little bit better, but I knew that God was still messing with my heart. And in 2002, God broke my heart for the people at the All Saints camp. And I got to know them personally. And I have names with the faces. And the hardest thing with working at the All Saints camp and maybe having so many of them with AIDS virus is the fact that you don't know if you're going to see them the next time. And Miss Lillian was one that broke my heart. Miss Lillian didn't have very many teeth. She had like three. And she spoke in broken English, broken Bahamian. And you always had to say, what Lillian? What Lillian? She loved John Cena, the wrestler. She had posters of him up. I don't understand. But God used her to speak to me, I think, more than anything that I was ever able to do with her, even taking her grocery shopping. And I, fortunately, said my last goodbye to her last February because she passed away this fall. You see, friends, I had walls. I put up boundaries. I wanted to keep people at arm's distance because I didn't understand the AIDS virus, and because we hear so many things of, oh, be careful, stay away. I'm not saying being ignorant, but I'm saying learn, get educated. And I'm not even talking about the AIDS virus in itself. What are the walls that you have up with people? People that are different than you, people that are unfamiliar to you. How do you have walls up with people that have a different belief system than you, that have a different value system than you? How do you have a wall up with people that may have addictions or have an economic scarcity or that believe in a different religion? Have you kept them like this? I don't want to be contaminated. I don't want to be touched by them when God is saying, I came out, reached out, and touched you. Now I'm asking you to do the same to those around you. See, sometimes in asking the question, who are we for, we have to ask the question, what walls do we have up? And how may God be asking you to take one of those walls down? Let me just illustrate this in a more practical way. I wear a lot of different hats. I get paid to be a pastor. I wish I could find a different income to be able to do what I get to do, but this is what I've been able to find and make happen and make work. But I coach. I love coaching. I coach football and baseball. I coach CrossFit. Okay, I love being in the school system. I'm in Horizon Elementary School, which is one of our three schools. I'm also in the high school. I play basketball on Tuesday mornings and Thursday mornings with guys. I'm in a bar league with softball during the summers. And the reason why I share those things, because those are all different ways and different opportunities to have conversations, to be able to connect, to be able to share the love and the light of what Christ has done. And it's not because I'm a pastor. It's because of who I am. So when I'm done with coaching a CrossFit class and someone comes up and wants to be able to dive into something a little bit deeper than how good their form is on this or on that, or how they can get a better time on this or on that, they want real deep questions and answers. Or the fact that I have parents who come up to me and ask me, can you coach my kid's football team? Because there's just something different about you. Or the fact in the last 3 months, our school district has gone through two different tragedies. And within moments of those tragedies happening, them calling myself and Sam, my associate, to come in and simply be available for anyone and anything. Now friends, I don't share that with you to brag, and I hope you hear my heart. I share that to you because that's in the practical, who am I for? Who are you for? And do we have walls up with people that God's calling us to make a deeper impact because of the love that he's given us and the love that we need to share for anyone? If Christ shared that love for you, who do you need to share that love with? All right, last question. Last question. Based on our passage, 1 John 3:18. How do we go? How do we go? The Message version says, let's practice real love. The NLT says, let us show love by the truth of our actions. Real love, the truth of love, putting it into practice. And if Christ is our example, what did he show us? How did he show us to go? I love how John 1:14 puts it in the Message version. It says, the Word became flesh and blood. The Word is Jesus. Jesus became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. We saw the glory with our own eyes, the one-of-a-kind glory, like Father, like Son, generous inside and out, true from start to finish. Christ's example was that he moved into the neighborhood. He realized that there was a separation from what he was familiar with in heaven, that he stepped out of what he was familiar with and came down and walked on earth so that he could be generous with us inside and out. So that's in practical ways. That's in being able to have a meal with someone. That's being able to listen to someone. That's being able to extend a touch with someone. And that's also being able to walk through the mess of life with someone. The stuff that we just like, oh, the heaviness that we feel within our heart and within our life, saying, you know what? I'm going to go there. I'm going to be on mission there. And see, the other picture that Jesus paints for us here in John is the fact that he was sent. And now he's sending you. That word sent we're familiar with, it's the word apostle or apostello in the Greek. And it means set apart, one who is sent, a delegate, a messenger, sent out on mission, sent forth with orders. You see, Jesus is saying, I was sent on a mission. I was sent on a rescue mission for you. And now that you're rescued, that you're living in relationship with me, I'm sending you on a mission. I'm sending you out with orders. I'm sending you into your world, into your neighborhood, into your work, into your friendship circles, so that you can share that experience of love and hope and peace and rescuing that you've received. Why do you think we love to watch rescue movies? I mean, think about it. Saving Private Ryan, Black Hawk Down, Mission Impossible movies, or some of my favorite Toy Story, right? Finding Nemo, Finding Dory now. Good thing we found them both. But think about it. We get engaged with those rescue stories because we understand the lostness, the hopelessness, the fear, I don't know where to turn next. And then all of a sudden, someone comes along and shows them the way. Jesus has done that in our life, and he's asking us to do that in people's life. So where do you need to be generous with others? Jesus puts it very plainly in Matthew chapter 25. Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick and in prison and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. And what's interesting is that the full chapter within there, Jesus continues on. And he says, if you don't do these things, if you don't live out your faith in this way, then you will be eternally separated from me. He's saying, if you are to be having your identity as love, and you are called to go and love others, then you are called to do it in very practical ways. So who do you need to help clothe? Who do you need to help feed? Who do you need to share compassion with? Who do you need to come and bring a meal with who's sick? Who do you need to build a friendship with? People that are familiar, people that are unfamiliar, but people who are lost that don't have the hope of Christ. See, friends, to be missionally motivated, I want you to keep asking these questions throughout the week. Ask yourself, who are we? What's my identity? I'm loved. I'm loved, and out of my identity, I'm going to love. Who are we for? We're for everyone. No walls, no boundaries. And how do I need to wrestle with God within that context? And then finally, how are we to go? How are we to go generously? In the everyday, in the practical, the joy of being able to say, have someone say, you know what, there's something different about you. What's going on with you? There's a light, there's a love, there's an energy, that there's something different about you. Right, let me tell you. Folks, the power of mission isn't knowing the answer. The power of mission is jumping into it with your whole life. Don't get me wrong, one of the privileges of doing missions in the Nassau Bahamas is that it's surrounded by water, if you didn't notice that. And I love to snorkel, and so I've taken time to snorkel on some of our off hours or whatnot. But one of the things that we did, we visited this historical site where they actually had these ships of pirates that would come up in this back area. And we explored and we looked around, and the other thing that we noticed was that there was this cliff with a perfect platform that you could look down across and over and you could jump into. And I'm a risk taker. I love taking risks, but this one might have been a little too high for me. See, this cliff was at 40 feet. And I looked down at it, and I looked at my buddies, and I looked down at it, and I'm like, I don't know. And then Jim Goostree, a 70-year-old man, stood up, bloop, jumped. I'm like, Jim! Got back up, came around again, he goes, you guys going? I'm still thinking about it. And he jumped again. I'm like, okay, now my pride got in the way. And said, if Jim's going to do it, I got to do it. So finally I stepped up. Whew, man, that's 40 feet. That's a long ways down. I stepped back and kind of shook it off. And finally, there's like four other people that went. Me and Jeremy were the last two. And Jeremy, of course, was very kind. He said, no, Aaron, you go first. All right. Because he was just as scaredy cat as I was. All right, boom, sploosh. And I come fighting my way up. I'm like, holy cow. That was not the enema I was expecting to get, but that was amazing. And it was this incredible rush. And then Jeremy comes down, and he jumps, and he was just a little more squatty than I was and crushed the water with his backside and was bruised from here to here. And he walked around like this for the last 2 days. I felt awful for him, but I had to laugh. You told me to go first. So why do I share this with you? I just thought it was a fun story. No, the reality is I think that's what our missions life needs to look like. Is that if we're truly going to engage in the questions that we're looking at, if we're going to truly engage in what it means to be on mission, let's be honest, there's times when we're standing at a 40-foot cliff and we don't know if we want to jump. And that we're filled with anxiety, and we're filled with fear, and we're filled, this might hurt, we might get messy, it might not feel good, it might be hard. And Jesus is saying, I want you to jump in because Jesus jumped in. He jumped in for you, and he's asking you to jump in for others. John Ortberg, in his book, Who Is This Man?, puts it this way. The disciples came to understand themselves to have a mission. Their task was to form a community that reflected the presence and the power of the God they learned from Jesus. extend the love of this community to everyone and invite anybody who is interested to join them. Friends, I'm inviting you to join in this community to be on mission. Really, the question is, are you in or not? Would you pray with me? Heavenly Father, I just ask that you would continue to work and move and stir within all of our hearts. And Lord, I pray that at any point and every moment of this conversation that I believe that you're having with each of us here, Lord, would you just continue to drill down your truth of love, your truth that people matter, your truth that we're supposed to go all over. And the missions isn't just over there. Missions is right here. In our neighborhood, in our schools, in our workplace, in our friendship circles, in our leagues, in our county, in our state, in our country, in our world. Continue to stir within our hearts. And Lord, I thank you for your Son, and I thank you for his love, and I thank you for his encouragement. In Jesus' name, amen.